and welcome back to another episode of Your Pocket Nurse, a podcast for student and graduate nurses. I would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the original owners of the land on which I am recording on today. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Today, I am joined by Lacey. She is a graduate midwife and a friend I met at uni, so I'm really excited for this chat. Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you going?
Good, good.
Good. How's your nights?
One of four down, so actually it was decent last night. Really busy, but yeah, keen to keep going through them so that I can get back on days.
Yeah, but I feel like you do nights so often. Like, you've done another set of nights before, like, when we had the nights together.
Yeah, I think the way work does them at the moment is, like, you end up landing, like, every second fortnight you do a set of nights. So it ends up being, like, every 3 to 4 weeks, which... I think it's hard, but I'm getting used to them. I did them so much as a student that, yeah, it's been okay, but I know, like, I'm probably going to run myself to the ground a little bit. I think next year I definitely will transition more to that, like, I think they offer the every 6 weeks you do 2 weeks and then you have a 6 week break. So I think that will work better for me at the moment. But with my family home, it's just so hard to, like, you know, stay in that pattern with COVID and everything, of having everyone in and out of the house.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. We do 2 weeks of nights, basically every 6 weeks. But honestly, like, I kind of hate it because for 2 weeks I feel so disconnected from the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, no, because it's definitely. You get that, like, even on your days off after nights, you feel like hung over and like groggy and you can't. And yeah, I just can never fall back to sleep like at normal bedtime after nights. I'm like, you know, like wide awake at like 1 o'clock trying to do my thing. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Whereas like I can sleep really well straight after a shift, but those next few days I'm like, can't get my bearings back to be like, what time is it? Oh, I actually need to like force myself to go to sleep now. Yeah.
See, like on my last night, like when I finished the shift, I like only nap for like maybe 3-4 hours and then I'm like really grumpy all day and then tired. But then I go to bed at like 8 and I'm like out like a light.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's the same. I wake up like just before 1 after the last night. And then I normally go to sleep. I'm like at 10 o'clock, which is what I would normally go to sleep. I'd set myself up and if I am tired, I'll go to sleep. But sometimes I just, I'm like, oh, episode, let's watch another one.
Yeah, I guess you get into that like night shift brain and you're just like, you know, stay up all night and everything.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm in birth center this set of nights and I definitely think they go faster when you've just got your one woman to look after and you're kind of, you know, in the swing of labor cares and getting everything ready for even if the morning staff come on. Normally, like I've found a lot of the chances is like you have a birth right at the end of the shift and then it's kind of that mix and match.
Oh, really? Between,
trying to like hand over but get as much as like all the documentation and things because that's kind of left for you to make sure I was at the birth, I need to do this. So yeah, but
gosh,
it's all fun and games.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, because I guess like you can't be like, oh no, don't have your baby now, wait for the next midwife to come.
Definitely. And I'm always like, you know, after a night shift, you've been with the woman for 10 hours and you're like, you're invested and you want to meet this baby. And even sometimes I'm always like, I really hope it happens on my shift. And then you're chatting to her and then, you know, it gets to like 6 o'clock and you're like, oh, okay. Like this could go two ways today. Like you could meet this baby, everything could be great. Or, you know, you get swept up in all the little, you know, push for 2 hours or something like that. And it becomes a massive, you know, workload when you're leaving. And especially on nights, like, you know, you have to come back. It can be hard, but yeah, fun in other ways.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Well, before we get, you know, keep talking about night shifts and everything. I usually start every episode with like three questions that I ask everyone. So the first one is, why did you want to become a midwife? And if you weren't a midwife, what job do you think you'd have?
Oh, really good question. I think, oh, this is hard. I didn't super know what I wanted to do like towards the end of high school. My mum is actually a teacher, so she took me along to like heaps of open days and things like that, and I was like really tossing up between potentially like psych or like dietitian, but I don't know, they never really stuck. I always really wanted to kind of go into something like women's health, or even just like anything that would like support people, or you know, like help them out. And someone told me about midwifery, and I was kind of like, oh, you know, I don't really want to do nursing. And I didn't really know the difference between midwifery and nursing at the time. I went to the ACU open day. It would have been either year 10 or year 11 with my mum, and I don't know, like going into that room, and they had like the doll that gives birth and things like that. It was all quite fancy and new at the time, and they had this really cool teacher who was ends up being one of my mentors at the start of my course. She was just so enthusiastic about it and talking about, you know, you don't always work with like sick women, and it's a lot about, you know, supporting that like unit of that family. And it's, yeah, like it's not just when they come into hospital to have their baby. And she, I don't know, just the way she talked really hooked me. So yeah, as much as like, you know, psych and dietitian and things like that were on my mind, I think midwifery was kind of, you know, like that moment when I met that mentor, I was like, okay, this is actually what I want to do. Yeah, so I think that's kind of the way I got into it. And I would say like, yeah, there was not, I think, nothing else that I would, you know, want to do or would have done if I wasn't a midwife now. I mean, I could change my mind in 10 years, but at the moment it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no. And I guess it's really interesting because I guess, well, depending on which, like, because there's so many different areas which midwives can work in, which I'm sure we'll get to. But, like, you know, if you work in the community, you can see, like, the whole transition, like, when, you know, the woman gets pregnant, then it's like towards the end, and then, you know, meet the baby afterwards. Like, you know, it's a nice sort of holistic sort of
definitely
job where you get to sort of follow people through.
Yeah, and like there is opportunity for that continuity the whole way through. Like some hospitals do offer some hospitals do offer positions, which you can do that. So you meet them at the booking appointment. You know, you might see the majority of appointments. You potentially could be at their birth, go like look after them in postnatal, and even go and visit them at home, which is kind of the way I want to get into mid after I've finished at the hospital I'm working at. But I mean, it is quite a small like niche area, and not all hospitals offer it, but definitely like that continuity plays a massive part in, you know, providing care to those families rather than just, you know, rocking up and having a baby. It's all, you know, that those 9 months are really crucial, which is quite cool.
Yeah, and I guess that sort of like leads on to my next question, which is like, what sort of area of midwifery you eventually want to work in?
Yeah, I do love birth center, and I think most midwives say that. It's like, it's pretty amazing environment to be in, especially, you know, when you are meeting those newborns and, you know, caring for those new time newborn families and things like that. They're all like so, I don't know, it's like the environment is such a like a rush, and it's so happy, and people are just like so grateful to be able to, you know, to share those moments with you. But definitely to areas that are not as, you know, fancy, but people do love, and I'm super keen to get more into them, is clinic. As a grad, we only do a couple of days in clinic, so booking in women, meeting them every like 4 to 6 weeks, and then closer up to their their due date, you see them like every 2 weeks to every week, checking on baby and things like that. It's a lot of education, which is also quite nice because you get to help people, like, you know, produce their birth plans and all that. So definitely want to get more into there. And then another area, which I know my hospital and a lot of other hospitals don't offer grads, is domiciliary, so home visiting. So going in a day or two after they leave home and really, you know, helping them like with breastfeeding or weighing baby and just checking up and seeing how like their mental health and things are, which is super key, like super interesting for me. As a student, I did a couple of days and yeah, it was just kind of a new fresh like view on that, like new family unit life. And I mean, for COVID at the moment, like, you know, people aren't around, like you can't have your family over, so people are really isolated with their, you know, just them mm-hmm. and their partner, or not having that like incidental, or you take the baby while I do something, or having family come over and clean and stuff. So you can kind of see that massive shift at the moment in just, you know, that extra support that people are needing. So mm-hmm. yeah, definitely dom is my like area of interest, which I want to get into further.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, and I love, you know, when we go on walks and you tell me all about that. But yeah, I guess with like, you know, very similar to like nursing, there's just so many different areas that you can get into, and I guess that's like what makes the job even more exciting, because you know that you'll never be bored. You know, you can just move around, and I feel like lots of midwives do that. Like, you've had a lot of different rotations, yeah. Which you know, we'll get to after my last question, but you've already like experienced so much like in a short amount of time, considering you just started your grad year in May.
Yeah, exactly. Like only 6 months in, I've done at the hospital I'm in. We have a few extra rotations that we do as just straight midwives. And I've been through them all. So I'm starting to go back through another rotation of everything, which is really good. Like, I think it really gets your hands on different environments and like different points of care, which is great. But yeah, so I definitely have experienced lots compared to, I guess, some of my other friends who are doing like 6 months here, 6 months there. Out of like 1 to 2 months max, and you just keep moving.
Yeah, I guess that's like a good way to experience lots of things, and I guess everything you learn will be helpful, because you know, you need to know like the different stages of like pre and post like natal, and I don't really know the specific terminologies.
no, that's right. Yeah, definitely. And especially the hospital I'm working at the moment, like not many women are like your normal pregnancy in terms of like uneventful, you know, you come in super healthy, no kind of risk factors, come in, have a baby pretty quickly and things like that. There's always those little extra things in the background that it might not affect antenatal, but in postnatal we might need to like care for her super different, or in birth center, or even she might skip birth center and go straight for a Caesar because we can't care for her in labor because of the risk factors she's got. So it's quite interesting when someone comes through the door, you read all their notes and you get everything like ready, because you just don't, you're kind of aware that something's going to be slightly off for this lady, and you want to make sure that, you know, you do all the right things.
Yeah, that's really interesting and good to be prepared.
Definitely.
And what has been like your favorite clinical experience or moment so far, whether it be on placement or at work? I'm sure you have lots of amazing birth stories, but yeah, what's been your favorite?
I've got two. I can't split them at the moment. One was when I was a student. It was pretty early on in like being in birth center, because you kind of go there in like second year, and I got allocated to a room, and the woman was doing hypnobirthing, and she was in the bath. I was told, like, you know, she was way off having a baby at the time, but, you know, go in, experience the water birth and like calm birthing scenario, which at uni, like, yeah, you learn about, but you don't learn like a massive amount. And I just thought it was so fascinating. We ended up having a baby on the shift. And with water birth, like, it's hands off. So the woman does like majority of it. She's the one to touch baby for the first time. And just that idea of like those candles, you don't have like the monitoring that you have when, you know, you're in the room. Like, it's just auscultations at the contractions. It was amazing. And that baby, like, babies don't take their first breath until they're kind of out of the water when they're in the water birth. So it was just amazing just to see like all the things that you learn at uni, but, you know, it's, they're like, oh, you might see this or you might not see that. And my hospital, yeah, it does offer water births, and just that whole experience of the woman able to lead that scenario, and, you know, her partner's voice was her like cue. So with hypnobirthing, she was able just to be like immersed in him. We only talked to him. We didn't talk to her. She knew that if we were worried, we would start talking to her, but he just kept her in the zone. She was just in this whole, you know, trance that, you know, she was safe, baby was safe. And yeah, she did amazing. But it was just, yeah, phenomenal to see a water birth just early on as a student, and knowing, like, I've done for work now, my we can upskill in water birth. So you have to like watch to do to like watch this seminar, which I got to do pretty early in my grad year, and then do some online learning. So I've done everything, and I'm up to doing two, which is great. And I'm super keen to, like, you know, when, if someone comes in and like that's my birth plan, I want to do it, which is cool. So that's probably my uni experience. And then short one, but a couple of weeks ago, I wasn't allocated to anyone in birth center, and my educator was like, Lace, come with me, like, we're going to set up a room. I walked into the room being unaware of what was going on, and we ended up going around to theater to deliver 30 week triplets, which was amazing. So I got to be a part of the I received baby one, which was probably in the best condition, and the room was just like surrounded by so many people. But I got to be a part of like not the resuscitation but scribing on the side, which I think as a grad you don't see as much. Like, you're that person who's supporting mum or you know, doing things on the side rather than being that scribe. So it was awesome to be able to be baby one scribe. And yeah, they're all doing really well in the nursery, so I'm glad. And yeah, it was just a great experience, because I guess sometimes you kind of miss that when you're already allocated to someone. Someone comes in and then everyone else kind of goes off like the floaters to go to a Caesar or something. So yeah, I was lucky enough to be a part of that, which was awesome.
Oh my god, they sound both so amazing. Like, I think hypnobirthing or like water birthing, I don't know if it's the same thing or different, but they sound so beautiful. Like, I just think, like, I've seen, like, you know, things on Instagram that that's people, like, how they gave birth and things. And I guess it is a little bit different because it's not, like, the usual way.
Yeah, but definitely.
So nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the triplets is so cute. So what happens, like, with a Caesar usually? So do they have to like resuscitate them every time, or is it like, how does it work?
They did come out crying, which was amazing. So you know, triplets, they're a little bit smaller than you know, your normal 30 week baby, because mum's housing the three of them. But you know, they all came out crying in some shape or form. Normally it depends on like their we still did delayed cord clamping, so gave them a minute. We held baby up in the Caesar so that mum could see all three of them, which was pretty cool. Dropped a little drape that's in front of her face so she could see them. They got weighed and then went over to the resuscitation cot. So there was three in the room. So in a Caesar, like if it's emergency, which this one was, there's always peds around because of the three. They had three different teams for them, which was also quite cool because, you know, you could see everyone doing their own little thing, getting into their groups, having that discussion about who's doing what. So my role as the midwife in those scenarios is to you don't as much scrub in, but you put on sterile gloves and you have this sterile drape that's draped over your shoulders. So you receive baby from the obstetricians after the delayed cord clamping if they're happy for baby to be, you know, that extra minute of that blood flow from the placenta to bubs. And then, yeah, they pass you baby and then you go to the resuscitation cot. You put baby down, and because there was the neonates there, they took over, put an oxygen sats on, checked baby like head to toe. If all of them were like, or if any of them were like, you know, doing their own thing and we were happy with heart rates and stuff, we would have just left them, like wrap them up and see how they went. There was one of them that needed a little bit extra oxygen, but no like compressions or anything, which was quite good in a way. Like they came out really
triplets.
Yeah, exactly. And especially 30 weeks, like I know that some hospitals now do resuscitate babies from 22 to 24 weeks. That's when they start. So 30 weeks, like, you know, they're quite a little bit like down the track, but they're still so small and still tiny. And they're still like considered preemie. So they went to the NICU, but I think all these three babies have now been downgraded to special care nursery. So tolerating feeds, maintaining their own temperatures. So it's, yeah, it's all quite cool.
Oh, it's so nice because, yeah, like I literally don't even know anything like about babies, you know, like, cause I, you know, I had like one peds placement, but apart from that, like I have no clue about how, you know, apart from like hearing like about yours and Kat's days, like working with babies, like I literally don't know anything. So I'm just sitting here like, oh my God, that's so interesting. You know, like all the, you know, all the different people involved and like, you know, the multidisciplinary team approach and everything.
Yeah, exactly. It is quite cool in terms of like when I first started like the course, I didn't realize that we were a part of the Caesars and that like our main job rather than being for mum was to look after baby, like once baby's born. And I think my first ever day on placement, I ended up with I went into a Caesar to like follow the woman through the whole you know, have your baby, go to postnatal, like we're in recovery and all of those things. That was their kind of way of being like, you know, welcome to placement, first year students, like this is what, you know, this like our job looks like. And I just remember being like, oh well, okay, like I didn't know this is so cool, like, oh, and they're so like fragile, but as you know, you get along the track, those babies are so resilient and, you know, like, yeah, they know exactly what they're doing, which is great.
Yeah, oh, that's really good. I guess we've sort of touched on different areas of like midwifery, but
yeah,
can you sort of like just talk about like the general areas which midwives can work in that you've sort of like, you know about?
Yeah, of course. So I guess the good thing about mid is for uni, you actually have to rotate through all areas, which I think because nursing so like broad, that's kind of one of the downsides, is sometimes you don't get those placements. So you do a particular amount of hours in every like area. So you do like you go to clinic and you do clinic appointments, which is great. Then you've got your birth center rotations that you can do as well, which is kind of the main spot that you end up you know, in any hospital. You've got posties, which, you know, looks after mum and baby from, you know, the moment they're born to a couple of days, and depending on what hospital you're at, sometimes that can be 24 hours, sometimes that can be up to a week. I know in some of the private hospitals they let you women stay a little bit longer, just to, you know, do all that mothercraft stuff and then just have an extra set of hands there, which is always helpful. So they're kind of the main three areas that we work in. And then, as I said, domiciliary is another option, which is home visiting, and you go around to people's houses after they've left the hospital to care for them that way. And then another area which as students you have to rotate through is special care nursery. So I think a lot of people don't realize that midwives do and can work in special care nursery. It depends on your hospital's like level of care that they can take up to. So if you do straight mid, you can't work in the NICU, by yourself. You have to do more training. And most of the time they make you go back to do nursing before you can do your NICU course, which is quite understandable. But you can work in special care. I did placement at a small, I think it was level 3 hospital at uni, which was like quite low risk babies, but they might need blood sugar monitoring, they might need nasogastric feeds, all of those like little cares. They can look after babies on CPAP, so needing quite a bit of oxygen and assistance to breathe up to 24 to 48 hours, and then they get transferred to a hospital that can provide them with a NICU. But yeah, that was quite cool. I didn't realise that as a student either, that, you know, we are allowed to work in special care. I think there's a couple of rules about particular babies that might be downgraded from NICU to special care, but there's a couple of things that we're not allowed to look after, but things like phototherapy or babies not tolerating feeds or needing, blood sugars, maintaining temps and things like that. We're all allowed to do that, which is kind of cool.
Interesting.
My hospital actually, I think what they've told us is that we actually have like IV antis on the ward. We have phototherapy on the ward, which at some hospitals would send babies to special care. So I think that kind of gives you that balance of like, I actually have cared for people or babies that have been, you know, needing those extra supports, but they're actually on the wards. They give you that extra layer of, you know, complexity when you're looking after a family.
Mm-hmm. Will you rotate through special care or not at this stage?
I can do my like transition to specialty practice. I can rotate through there if I want to next year. You don't, as a straight mid during your grad year, rotate through there, which I think has been good because it allows me to like focus on more of my postnatal and my birth center experiences. But I think, I've been tossing up, so I'm not 100% sure. I didn't love it when I was as a student. It didn't really like super click with myself, but also because of the hospital I was at, there wasn't a lot of difference. Like the same, we were looking after the same babies the whole 2 weeks that I had my rotation. The transition to specialty practice is like at my hospital is offered for 5 years. So, I mean, if I did change my mind, I'm sure like, you know, I could rotate through there. I'm not too sure yet.
Yeah, I guess there's always like so many different things we can go into, but I guess, you know, you never know until like one day you're like, actually, you know, I actually want to do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So,
and everyone has different interests. Like, I'm sure there's like heaps of people that, you know, want to work in one area, and, you know, like, I'm sure there's not everyone that loves every single part of every job. So yeah, there's like a lot to explore, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I know a lot of people when they do work in tertiary hospitals like the one I'm working in, when they want to downgrade to something a little bit smaller or a little bit closer to home, some of them decide, you know, okay, maybe special care nursery or maybe dom or something that's a little bit specialty might look better on my resume in terms of like I have experienced the whole lot of this hospital rather than, you know, your generalized fields. But yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm not going anywhere from the hospital I'm at, but you know, I might change my mind later and be like, nah, I do want to know like that I can work there if I want to.
Yeah, that's a good point. And in general, how was the nursing? I mean, sorry, not nursing. I'm so used to saying nursing. how was the midwifery course? And like, what were the requirements? Because I know I had a few people messaging me asking about like the, what is it? Continuity of care.
Yeah.
And like how you have to follow all those mums and bubs and all that. So how was that whole like study workload? Because I feel like you were doing placement and then you're like, oh, my, you know, the woman I'm following is going into labor. Like, I need to go.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did give you a really good opportunity to, like, you know, have that, like continuity as well as like, you know, if your lady, because you had to before COVID, my uni, which I believe at the moment is ACU, was the only university that offered straight midwifery in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vic Uni offered it my first year, but then they cancelled their course, so everyone kind of shuffled. So mid, even if you do a double degree as well, you still have to meet these requirements. But, you know, 3 years of study for straight mid, and then you do your placements, you do your 880 hours of placements rotating in all of the areas, which I guess is good and bad in terms of, you know, you got to make sure your placements fit right with the year level and the subjects and stuff. And I think for myself, like clinic or like antenatal clinic is something that you get offered in first year, and because of the I guess lack of placement spots over the hospitals, I didn't get offered it until final year. So I think that was kind of a downfall for me being in posties in first year rather than clinic. But, you know, it happens and everyone had to shuffle a little bit. But on top of the 880 hours, you've got to meet your skill requirements. So rather than being like, oh, I've done this skill, I'll get it signed off by my, like, preceptor or educator or something like that. Midwifery offers, you have to facilitate 30 normal vaginal births on placement. So unfortunately, like birth center and the labor ward is quite hard because you don't actually know what you're walking into when you get allocated a room, and you also can't, like, you know, don't know, every lady's different in her you know, care and has her body had a baby before, like have we induced her, is she in spontaneous labor. So I think 30 births is so hard, and especially normal vaginal. So that doesn't include, you know, your instrumental births or anything like that. So, and that's you as a student getting your hands on, if that's, you know, double scrubbed at the beginning of your course because you don't actually know what you're doing, which I know the first few births of mine were double scrubbed. And then towards the end of your university course, sometimes that's like, there's no hands there and they're just talking you through it, but you have to facilitate the 30 births. So you can't just be in the room, you can't just deliver the placenta, it's 30 births. So that's quite hard when, you know, you might have a couple of good runs and then end up with your like a couple of instrumentals or going for a few Caesars. I know I had a couple of runs of just really bad weeks where I didn't get any births on placement, which is hard. But you get up and you go the next day and you're positive. I did plenty of night shifts because I knew, I put my hand up for night shifts because I was just like, yep, I know I want these births and I need these births and I don't want to be at Christmas needing them. So I guess that's quite hard with the 30 births. And there's other skills, but the births are the hardest ones to gain. And then on top of your placement and trying to get your numbers, throughout the course you follow 10 pregnancies, so 4 clinic appointments or, you know, visits to ultrasounds and things like that for each woman you want to get to. And I think, I don't know if ACU is the only one that says you have to get to the 7 births, but you have to, you're supposed to get to 6 to 7 of the 10 births. So you want to find women who are happy to have that extra person in the corner or, you know, helping, like, provide that environment that she's happy to birth in, which I thought was quite hard, especially being such a young person going into the course. You know, I was fresh out of high school. I didn't know anyone having a baby. So you're having to, like, get on, which at the start of uni, they didn't want us to use social media. But I was like, I don't know how to find 10 pregnant ladies who are happy for me to be in the room or even to come and just chat to them in the waiting room for an appointment. So that's quite hard. And then you kind of on call, like whenever they want to book an appointment, then you want to be there. So you've got to make it very flexible to be like your life around those times. I know I had 4 women at once and they were all due within like 3 or 4 weeks of each other. But to meet the requirement after second year of having like 7 women, pregnancies, like, and their care of the 4 antenatal appointments, the birth and 2 postnatal appointments, they had to be done by like February or something. So I was rushing out. I was like, Monday I was here, Tuesday I was there, I had Wednesday off, and then like Thursday I had two appointments for my other ladies. And yeah, it's quite hectic. But I think like it really does put the perspective of if those women want an extra support person, like, you know, in the room, you want to make it the best that you can, and you want to provide them with anything that if they ask, you know, can you do this or can you come to this appointment? If you can't fit your life around those appointments, it becomes like hard, and you feel like you're kind of not being able to be there for the full care because you're kind of that extra little provider that, you know, those pregnancy appointment waiting rooms are long. Like you could be there for an hour one day. It's a big task, but I think it's so worth it. And it wasn't probably until second year that I was like, okay, I understand why they make us do this. And some people fall through the cracks, but it's okay because there's reasons. And yeah, they're not always ghosting you for the wrong reasons either.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's such a big commitment, you know.
It is, yeah.
And I think maybe people don't realize that, but, you know, as you say, it's so worth it. You know, once you go in there and, you know, being so passionate about that future career as a student, it like, you know, helps it all, you know, fall into place because, yeah, I guess you can't just go in and catch a baby with no experience. You know, yeah, you've exactly. got to ticking off all the things you have to do and everything.
Yeah, and it's kind of that groundwork of like, you know, you have sat the appointments and waited for, you know, it might be there, you're there for an hour, it might be a 15-minute appointment, but you understand like what the women are going through from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it wasn't probably until like my second or third kind of continuity experience that I was like, okay, I can't just sit here, I need to offer things. Like, yeah, I can't be that provider that, you know, if they ask you a question and it's a medical one, you have to transfer them to be like, oh, you actually should go talk to your midwife, or you should call the hospital, or you should go to emergency. Like, that's, we can't answer those questions as students because, you know, we don't have the trainings for it. But yeah, if she wants to know research on something, or asks further questions about, you know, baby injections, or what do you think about my birth plan, you want to be that person that can be like, oh, okay, I actually can provide assistance for someone that needs it. And it doesn't have to be complex pregnancies, it could just be, you know, they want an extra support because last time their partner couldn't come to appointments. Yeah, but yeah, I found it super helpful in just seeing the other side of things, because now as a midwife, when I'm trying to do clinic and I'm running 20 minutes behind, I know how they're feeling out there. And some people with even COVID, you can't bring your partner to your appointment, so it becomes quite tricky.
Yeah, it would be very interesting though, the whole process of it all. I guess speaking a bit more about your uni experience, is there like a reason why you just chose to study midwifery? Did you ever consider the dual degree, and do you think like you ever have any restrictions in your job opportunities? I know you're not like super keen on NICU at the moment, but do you think there's any other restrictions at the moment for you?
I mean there are a little bit of restrictions, and I think there's quite a lot of politics behind, why didn't you do the double degree? And I, even like just with my family and stuff, they're like, oh, Lacey's a nurse, blah blah blah. And I'm like, oh, like, not that I have anything against nursing, but I'm also like, well, no, I didn't go through that degree, and I can't give you advice on blah blah because that's not what I did. But I think like midwifery, like going to ACU and finding midwifery that way, that really was like played on my mind in terms of like, oh, okay, like that's how they talk about mid, that's how they talk about women-centered language and like that continuity process and things like that. I was lucky enough to secure an early position at the ACU's midwifery course. Like, I don't know if some of your listeners know, but the ATAR for the double degree and single degree is really high. Like, it's late 90s, late 80s, early 90s in the score. So, you know, that's a lot of pressure. I personally put way too much pressure on myself. And I applied for this. It was at the time an early position. You like wrote a little essay, sent through some things that you did outside of school and stuff like that. It's a bit different now. After a couple of years, they've like changed the way you apply for these positions. But I got an acceptance into midwifery in August, which just made me like so relaxed at the end of year 12. Like I did my exams because I still had to get an ATAR. But I was so happy that I got into that position that I didn't really think of the double degree. And like maybe looking back, I'm like, oh, you know, it would be kind of cool to have done the double. But I think, yeah, just the way my journey went with finding midwifery and ACU, I kind of stuck it that way and been like, no, I'm happy with my decision.
Yeah,
I mean, I have lots of friends who are doing or like who started the double degree at Deakin who fell out of that position and they're no longer doing nursing or midwifery. And I don't know their circumstances, but I know it is quite hard to juggle the double degree because you have to do the nursing requirements and the midwifery requirements only in an extra 12 months. So you do your 880 hours nursing, 880 hours of midwifery, plus your continuity of care, plus your 30 births with only 12 months extra. I know. It's
and all crazy. Unpaid as well. Like
all unpaid, yeah.
It's, oh, gosh, that's...
I know. Yeah. And I, yeah, I think, like, for my mental health and even, like, just looking back now, like, when there are in charges that do go, oh, were you the, like, double degree or single degree as a grad, even though it doesn't really matter, like, I've got the job, I do exactly what I'm doing now, like, anyone could look after any of those ladies, they actually go, oh, cool, like, they're not like, oh, you know, she didn't do nursing, so I can't give her this person, but yeah, it's, I think the restrictions more in terms of if you want to go through, maternal child health nurse is you have to do the double degree and then you do a little bit extra nursing. So I know a lot of midwives go down that path, you know, when they're having families or they're more interested in that like neonates peds area. But yeah, I mean, at the moment I haven't found too many restrictions. I'm not super keen on ED either. Like the emergencies that happen in birth center are enough for me. Yeah. But yeah, I think in my head, I've convinced myself that, you know, that single degree was the way that I went into midwifery and I'm, yeah, happy. And I haven't had many restrictions in terms of, you know, having to care for women that I have no idea what's going on or that a lot of the time the doctors take over majority of the care for a woman who's like super high risk. Like we might be there for the birth, but you know, you've got your peds there and the obstetrician is there for the birth or they've got a particular plan, like they make all of that. So yeah, I mean, there are a few restrictions but nothing crazy.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And I think, yeah, like there's no point like dwelling on, oh, like what could have been, and like the worst that comes to worst, like for example, like Kat, you know, she did midwifery single and then she went back and did nursing, you know, like there's always a way around it if, like, you know, it comes to a point where you decide, oh, actually I do want to go down the child and maternal health nurse pathway. But yeah, I guess everyone just has a different like interest and area they want to work in. So if you know, yeah, you want to do straight midwifery, then like you shouldn't feel any, you know, different because you've just done that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think being so young coming into the course, and I feel like you probably are the same, like we've got so much time ahead of us to, you know, change and try different pathways. You know, there's no restrictions on, yeah, like having to go back to uni at the moment. So I'm like, yeah, get in, start working and then see where it takes me.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I guess now let's touch a little bit more about like your grad year. Yep. So you're doing your grad year in a public hospital, but can you, did you have private hospital placements?
I did, yes.
Yeah. So what sort of the difference in the role of the midwife in these? Like, what are sort of some pros and cons? Lots of people were interested in this as well.
Yeah, of course. So I think in a private and public hospital, the kind of difference is private, a lot of women and families pay for an obstetrician, like that's their continuity person. That's the person that they want to see for their appointments, to talk about their ultrasounds, that they want baby to be born like with that person in the room, but postnatally, not like they might have a review or something that way with the obstetrician. So the midwife in the private hospital as such is more, they facilitate, like, you know, the start of the induction. They liaise with the private obstetrician to, like, make sure that, you know, if this is what you want, this is the way we're going to, like, you know, start the induction, or she's coming spontaneous labor, like, when do you want to come in and do an assessment, all of that thing. So we're kind of that, like, helping hand as much in a private hospital. This is what I've experienced when I've done placements.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are the primary leader in the postnatal care. So we're the person who's on the shift work, looking after them, you know, throughout the day and night, changing dressings, helping feeds, all of those things. So it's a little bit like, little bit clunky in terms of private hospitals, in like we don't do the whole care, we don't follow the women through the whole pregnancy, you don't really see them antenatally unless they've come into the hospital for like monitoring or something like that, because their idea is they want, which is perfectly great, and they've found that person that they're confident in, and they want that obstetrician to be their primary care leader. Whereas in public hospitals, you know, you could see some new face every single time you come to an appointment, in the birth center, all of that. Public hospitals do offer a continuity program, which is definitely something that I've thought about going into in the future. And that is, you know, following them through from appointments to birth center. So kind of the same idea of that private obstetrician to like a continuity midwife. And, you know, you see them for appointments, you see them for the birth center, you help them in postnatal, you go and visit them at home. But that opportunity is quite small for most hospitals. It's very low risk pregnancies. The other thing that kind of, when you sent me those questions about the private, is that you can actually do private midwifery as well, which relates to like home birthing, and those midwives have their own kind of little clinics that you can go to, or they can come to your house and they can do all your appointments and things through that. I did have a continuity experience where one of my ladies, she was seeing a private midwife, and that was a great opportunity just to see kind of that side of things. So she went to this, it was like a little house, but it was their clinic. It was really chill environment, you know, did all the education, talked to the midwife, checked up on baby all in those appointments. And then unfortunately she had to have her baby in a hospital due to unforeseen circumstances, but technically the aim was a home birth, and they private midwives can facilitate that. And it just means women are booked into a hospital just in case something goes wrong. There's a point of reference to call. That's where the ambulance takes them. But yeah, that's also another way. Like, you know, if you wanted to do that, I know grad years are quite scarce in private midwifery, but there are some people around who are, you know, keen to have that extra set of hands and help people learn the ropes that way.
Yeah, I guess that's really interesting. But I assume you would need like a bit of experience before you went into that. I feel like you'd have a lot of autonomy. And I guess that's same with like with community nurses, because you're sort of like the sole healthcare provider going to these people's homes, making assessments and things like that. Like you sort of need to know what to look out for and, you know, how to escalate concerns, because in a hospital I've got a doctor and a nurse unit manager and like the nursing charge, but when you're the one there, then it's kind of like you need to be the one thinking, like you can call someone, but you're still the only one there at the time.
Exactly. And someone who, as much as that's their idea of, like, you know, their workplace, they want to make sure that environment is safe and happy for, like, their family. But if something needs to be escalated or, you know, you need to come in just to be monitored, like, that's the right thing to do. And someone who's happy to be, like, I know we've talked about this, but, you know, these are the options if something goes wrong and we need, you know, the hospital's equipment or that environment. And of course, like those private midwives, we had one the other day, they're allowed in the hospital, they're allowed to be there, they're allowed to be that person that you liaise with when you're trying to make decisions, because in all, like in the end of the day, our job is to make sure that the woman's happy with what's going on and that it's freely like a discussion between everyone, and the decision making is left on her and we're not making those decisions for her. So it definitely, yeah, like having the experience of going to see a private midwife was quite eye-opening, and she was awesome. She was like super keen to like let me know what was going on, but also like, okay, if this happens, we're going this way, you know, we've got these people on call if we need someone in an emergency straight away. So yeah, she was awesome and was doing all the right things.
Yeah, well, that's really good. Interesting.
Yeah.
A bit more about your sort of experiences, but what sort of the patient ratio in some of the different areas that you've spoken about? Because obviously, like, you've got double the patients when the mother has the baby. So yeah, how does it all work?
So at the moment, the hospital I work in, and it's quite similar to majority hospitals, so during the day, on a birth center ward, you have like one laborer to one midwife. That's kind of the key thing, and doesn't change overnight or anything like that. So you got your one-to-one. If they're an antenate that's getting reviewed, or you know, like we're not really sure what's going on or something, sometimes you can have a couple of extra ladies that are floating, but they're not in labor, they're not, you know, contracting well or dilating more than 4 or 5 centimeters. So it just depends on that way. But in a ward setting, like a complex antenatal ward or postnatal or something like that, it's 4 women to 1 midwife, which ends up being 4 women, 4 babies to one midwife. And then overnight, it's 6 women and 6 babies. So you have your 12 human beings to one midwife. So it can get quite intense.
Yeah.
They try not to overload you, but like last night when I was at work, like they had to open up the beds to 6 patients per midwife. Yeah, and it was a bit hectic up there.
And I guess like sometimes if like she's about to give birth or whatever, like someone has to take over, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if you don't have, if you're not expecting her to be in the labor and you're just sort of think, oh, she's just chilling, but anything can change. And I guess you would have people coming in last minute as well. Does that happen?
Yeah, like last night I started my shift with, you know, your full ward, everyone was allocated to someone who was doing something, or we were about to start an induction in a room, and then our assessment center, which has its own midwife, that was full of laborers who were, you know, 3 to 4 centimeters wanting pain relief, which means they're not going home and we have to find beds for them. But when you have enough midwives, it can be a bit tricky. So I think we had someone come down from upstairs and, you know, help out and things like that. And a couple of people went home, a couple of people went up to postnatal. So it does work out, but it can get a bit crazy. Like we do, the good thing about our assessment center is there's a phone number. So, you know, people go into labor and like they ring to be like, hey, this is what's going on. So we know who's in the, like, you know, the woodworks outside of the hospital. So it's not just a surprise when, you know, 4 ladies who have had babies before rock up at work and they're like, yep, I'm ready to push, or, you know, or like quite in the swing of things. So yeah, it can be hard, But yeah, the ratios in birth centre are a lot better than what they are in postnatal.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, I guess. I feel like it just can be, like, as any shift, like, it can be super unpredictable. Like, my Saturday 100%. Shift was, like, so crazy. And everyone's like, aren't Saturdays meant to be nice? You know? Like, I guess you can go into shift and be like, oh, none of these ladies seem to be, like, they're going to be pushing anytime soon. And then they exactly. might all start pushing at once.
Yeah, that it does happen. And then, you know, because when you are having a baby, you have to have your extra midwife in the room to look after bubs once baby's born. Like, you know, you give skin to skin and you're just, like, caring for mum and baby and just tidying up the room or giving third stage and things like that. And but if you've got, you know, two midwives in one room, two midwives in another, they're in charge somewhere else. Like, it doesn't leave too many more people if, you know, things happen. So I think it's quite interesting to see, at the moment, like, I think this time of year for us is quite a high number of babies are born, and which can be a bit crazy, and especially with COVID and everything like that, people needing that extra support. So I think it is quite hard to, underestimate or overestimate, like, who's needed to be here, especially on a night duty. Like, you don't want people just sitting around, but also you just don't know what's going to come through the door.
100%. And do you think there has been, like, a COVID baby boom?
100%. I think from, like, talking to families and stuff, like, quite a lot of, like, first-time families who might be engaged but not married, who are just like, you know what, let's have a baby. Like, that was the plan for after the wedding, but we just don't know when that's going to happen. I've had a lot of conversations of families who have been like that, or, you know, best time to have your second or your third, because, you know, you still want them close together, but you know, you've got that extra support person if your partner's working from home. Like, yeah, it might be a bit distracting, but, you know, you've got, he's there or she's there. So it's been definitely, I think, busier. And yeah, like, even with COVID, like, still people having babies even if they are infected and stuff. So it's been quite interesting to see, you know, people and what they kind of do with that as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, like, to see, like, sort of like a comparison, like, the numbers that will come out and see, like, how many more people. Because I guess, yeah, if you're just sitting at home and you're a bit bored, why not have a baby?
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people, like, some people, it takes a while for them to, you know, when they start trying to actually conceive, or people who haven't tried at all, they don't know. So they might be like, oh, you know, it might take us a few months, and then boom, you know, you're 5 weeks pregnant and, yeah, it worked and you're happy and things are going well. Like, yeah, it's quite a different dynamic, I think, for at the moment.
Yeah, it would be. Speaking of babies, like, what are, like, the most popular baby names at the moment? Ooh. Or, like, and, like, maybe what is, like, you know, obviously patient privacy and anything, but what is, like, the weirdest name as well, that in your own opinion, because I'm sure other people might be like, oh, that's not a weird name, but, like, what are popular names and probably the weirdest name you've heard?
Okay. I think at the moment, like, a lot of people have gone that more traditional, like, bring back those names. I don't know, like, I've had a lot of, like, Georges and Charlies and, like, Raphael, but, like, for a girl and a boy. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I had a family last night who it was the name of the girl, which was quite cute. And she was gorgeous. And I think Lenny is getting up there, that name. I know someone whose dog's named Lenny, so it kind of is a bit strange to me. But probably the most more
that's right.
Most randomest name, which is a bit funny because it was one of my follow throughs and she's so gorgeous, but I think her and her partner were set on this name kind of before they kind of figured out the politics behind it. So the baby is actually called Luca now, like technically on all paperwork, but they wanted the name to be Lucifer.
Oh.
And because that's like,
that is, you know, weird.
It's not allowed in Australia. Like, you can't call your kid Numbers or Queen or
Wait, what does Lucifer mean?
It's like the devil, like, you know.
I've seen on Netflix.
Yeah. So she loves that TV show. Yeah, so she loves. Why would
you name your kid that?
Well, it made me laugh. Like, she's quite a quirky lady, but she was awesome. And one of like my best people to like sit in a room, waiting room, and talk to. But yeah, when I wasn't at the birth. I just left, and they were saying, like, you know, oh, she's not in labor, blah blah, and she had a baby like on my way home, which is frustrating, but it is what it is. But yeah, she was like, no, like, technically we have to call him blah blah, like Luca, but the idea is for like Lucifer, which I thought was like, you know, not why not but quite funny in a way.
Yeah, I guess that is bizarre. I didn't know that there was rules about what you can and can't exactly name your baby.
Lots of rules about just like business guidelines. Yeah, like, you can't call them Numbers, you can't call them Queen, King, any really? Of those. And there's a couple, like, and there's a few rude, not rude words, but like kind of wrong words that you also can't say.
Oh, I'm going to search this up after this episode and look at
the Do next. It. Yeah. No,
definitely. I'm surprised. Because I think, like I would think, like, Kim Kardashian names all her kids weird. Like, Saint. Like, I'm surprised, like, none of her kids are called, like, King West or something. You know, I feel like that's something she would name her kid.
Well, I don't know if Australia's rules are different, but, like, when you go to like register your baby online, it's like through I believe Centrelink, and you get paperwork at the birth to like finish off all of that, and you have like 60 days to name the baby. I believe it comes up on that website to be like, you know, please check that, you know, your baby's name's not one of the following, or like it's not in the suggested ideas. Yeah.
Oh, how bizarre that is. I've actually never heard of that. Like, I remember all that stuff with Elon Musk and how he, like, they named their baby, like, weird, and technically it's not a valid name, but I was just like, it was a weird name. Like, how do I even say it? But I didn't know there was actual rules like that.
Yeah, definitely there is. And especially, I think every country is slightly different in terms of their rules and, like, restricted exact names, or if you could, like, change them a little bit. But I do find a lot of people end up like, you're like, oh, that's a pretty name, and then they write on the card in the that goes on the cot, and I'm like, is that the spelling? Like, I'm not sure about that one. Or like, have I been spelling that name wrong my whole life? And like, no, I haven't. But I'm like, oh, okay. Like, but then questions yourself, like, you go into a room in a postnatal ward and you try and, you know, you meet the lady for the first time, you look over to the cot to be like, oh, that's a gorgeous, and then you're like, oh, I can't pronounce that. And like, okay. And then you have to ask them, because I'm horrible, like, not with names, but with like pronunciation. So I'm always like, so how do you say his or her name again? Like, oh, but yeah, it's quite interesting. And I find a lot of families are going for more traditional, but like strange spelling.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like I missed one question that I wanted to ask. So kind of taking a few steps backwards before we finish up. But I guess, what is the pros and cons of midwifery as a carrier? I know no one likes shift work, but there might be some people. But apart from those like sort of typical things, is there anything that you would suggest?
I think in terms of mid, I guess kind of, some of the, you know, ideals around midwifery versus like nursing or something is that you're not always like looking after like sick patients. Like, they're actually quite well. Pregnancy is a natural thing. And sometimes families do work really hard to get to where they are, in terms of if, you know, they've been through lots of IVF troubles or you know, like they've had a miscarriage or like they've had to terminate or something in the last few pregnancies. So I think it's quite a very
it's an emotional area, you know.
It really is. And I think before COVID, like as a student, I could see it's a lot about families, and you most of the time it's not just, you know, you've got your partner in the room and everyone's at home, but like you've got your mum or your mother-in-law or something in there as well, because you want to share those things with them. Not that I would have my mum in my birth, but
oh, you reckon? Like, not
no I don't think I would want. I would think only my partner. I don't know.
Do you think she'd stress you out too much?
I think so, but also like, like would she just sit there? I don't know. Some people, like I find partners, and like they can be really helpful and really like in the zone, and helpful to us as well. You know, moving little things, helping like position the woman or whatever. But then sometimes they can just be like in the corner doing nothing. And not
playing
being
video
helpful.
Games.
Yeah, I had a fan of someone watching YouTube the other day, and I was like, "Hello, like I need your help." but it, yeah, I think mid in a way can be a really rewarding way of supporting some, like a family, or if it's just a single mom, you know, trying to, you know, create their family unit. For us, like the opportunity to provide care throughout the whole pregnancy rather than just, you know, that moment of birth is also quite cool. And I think I do love like the education side of things and just, you know, teaching women how to swaddle babies and, you know, little tricks and tips that they're going to use when they take home. I mean, not as much like pros and cons, but just, I don't know, I just have that, there's this moment when women have their babies, and not a lot of people don't find out the gender anymore, but that moment where they're like, oh my god, what do we have, and they're just immersed in this little newborn that's, you know, been their life for 9 months, but they haven't even met this person. It's, I don't know, super rewarding, and I always get quite emotional because I'm like, oh my god, like we helped them get to this, even if it was, you know, a normal vaginal birth or an instrumental, or they went for a Caesar, you still try and make that as supportive and special for them if it's their first, their third, their fifth baby, or I don't know.
Probably it's really nice. And it's nice hearing you talk about how passionate you are about your job, because it's really nice to hear that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think this like last kind of 6 months of really getting in the swing of things, like, you know, shift works hard, but it's always worth it in the end.
Yeah, it definitely is. And once you realize, you know, how much you really love your job and like what you're contributing to others, it like makes everything so much worthwhile. But you just have to find that area that you love. You know, you can't go and work in an area that you're like dreading going to work.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I mentioned this at the beginning, but I started off in a complex antenatal ward, and being a fresh grad, I had to get everything checked. And at the start, I was like, oh no, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I moved to birth center and I was like, okay, yep, I get it now. Like,
yeah,
you know, you've got the extra support and everything, and you're doing all of the stuff that I've just done for the last month to get to them to like have that birth that they want and things like that. So it was, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, well, that's really nice. Well, thank you for this chat. I feel like I've learned so much about midwifery and like more about what you do when you're at work, you know. It's been nice. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Not as such, but just, you know, I think that if, you know, anyone's interested in that side of things and, you know, they're listening to, you know, your podcast because they're doing nursing or something, just remember, like, you can do a postgrad in mid, and as much as it sounds a bit crazy with the whole 30 births and 10 pregnant women in the 1 year after you do your nursing, it, like, it is so worth it, and to have that kind of extra one up with the extra qualification, you know. And also I guess my inbox is always open if anyone has any questions. Yeah,
100%. I'll definitely pass on any more questions.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think I've heard, because I haven't really explored the midwifery post-grad, but yeah. I think some people, like, you apply for it and, like, you kind of work as a midwife while you're studying it. Is that right? Like, you do it through
hospital? Like, so you go through a uni still, but you get put in a hospital and you kind of do like shifts like a couple of days a week, so you still, you know, still go to uni, say it's your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday or whatever, or I don't think it's that often, but you know, you go and you've got like, the good thing is you've got that biology knowledge and things like that, so you're only learning kind of the nitty-gritties about, you know, all the changes stuff, in pregnancy, birthing, how to facilitate particular, you know, skills. But yeah, you've got like from the beginning to the end and you just rotate through, which is also quite helpful. And especially getting to know a hospital if you're very interested in it, and still working as a nurse if you want on the side. Like, you, yeah, you're getting those skills up really quick.
Yeah, I guess there's lots of different ways and you can always explore, and like, I'm sure there's heaps of people that have done like nursing first and then done a postgrad in midwifery. So
yeah,
there's always someone to talk to. I think that's the most important part. Like, I get lots of DMs asking me questions about like, oh, like, do you know anyone that's worked on this type of ward or this? I want to know more about it. And I think that's how you find out more without actually working or doing a course in one area. Like, you have to ask people questions and get to know more about their days and find out, oh, does this sound like something I would want to do or not?
100%, because
like, you don't know. So yeah, I think it's important to find someone that you can talk to about you know, what they do, and find out if you want to do that too.
Exactly. And especially like, yeah, if even if you've got a family friend that does it, try and find someone else as well, because, you know, one person's circumstances isn't always exactly, you know, the same. But you, yeah, getting that kind of like breadth of, okay, that's what they really like on that ward, or that hospital offers this or something, is, oh yeah, it's great to even just, you know, get those ideas and talk to someone, because yeah, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit off topic, but like, at one stage when I was trying to decide what preferences to put for wards, I was like, oh, like, you know, neuro sounds really cool, like strokes, blah, blah, blah. And then I spoke to some nurses that did a grad rotation there, and I'm like, now, like, thank God I don't work neuro. It sounds so heavy. So hats off to all the nurses that work in that area. But definitely, I'm so glad I asked someone, you know, because now that I think about it, I think I would have, like, hated nursing, because like, I know that's not an area that I'm not built for that, you know. Like,
oh, 100%,
you know. Yeah. So a little off topic, but yeah, find out, ask questions, and then you'll just learn as you go.
Exactly. And you know, your grad year is actually for learning, and I go home with like, not the biggest headache, but like, whoa, okay, what did I actually learn today? Because it's not just like, oh, one little thing. It's like, oh, I understand this better and I understand that better. And yeah, like, you can't learn it all in a, you know, if it's a 3-year degree, 4-year degree, or even a postgrad, you can't learn it all at once. And the only way to do it is to get your hands on things and jump straight into it, because you can pick up things really quickly when you're a grad.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think something popped up on my phone. But thank you so much, Lace, for coming on and chatting all about nursing with me. I mean, I did it again. Oh, gosh, I hate me. I'm so tired. But thank you for coming and talking all about midwifery. I'm so sorry. I don't know why I keep saying that.
No, it's fine.
But thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think it's like COVID brain. I'm just like, I'm not thinking straight at the moment.
Totally fine.
Oh, I really apologize. But yeah, thank you so much. And hope you have a really nice shift tonight, and you know, you get some babies.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks. Hopefully my lady who I looked after last night is, you know, had a baby, or is just about to when I get on the ward. And yeah, we can meet this little cute one.
Yes, I feel like, do you get most excited about like, I don't know, getting to know their name, the baby's name? Like,
yes.
I don't know. I feel like I'd be like, ooh, because sometimes do the mums not tell you until after?
Well, I find, yeah, that or like the demographic that is in the area that I work in, they like have to know like baby's time, date of birth, and like the stars alignment before they can pick like the letter that it's going to be named after. So
really?
I'm always like, oh, like, you know, what's this gorgeous one's name, or do you have a name? And they're like, oh, no. And then maybe like an hour later, I'm like, oh, have you decided on a name? They're like, no. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to pester you, but everyone's going to pester you because that's one of the cute things about, you know,
the job.
Meeting those little cuties, being like, what's the name? What's the name? But yeah. Oh, it's quite funny. But yeah, no, they definitely, there's a lot of people who like wait and they check up on, you know, what letter it's allowed to be under due to like their religion or the stars and things like that before they like actually pick a name, which is quite cool.